Good ball played in for Tony Morley. Oh, he must be! And it is! Peter Will!
Hello, 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 and welcome to Gather Round Again, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you in association with underagaslitlamp.com. We are here live on YouTube, and I am joined by the erstwhile at K2 Villa himself, Andy. Hi, Andy.
Hello, Craig. Hello, everyone. Mixed fortunes this week, isn't it?
Mixed fortunes this week.
How are you doing anyway?
Oh, I am bewildered and confused, but we are here and I am just pleased to have some time out in my day to talk all things Aston Villa. As you say, Andy, a really mixed bag this week. The week obviously started off very nicely indeed with a beautiful 2-0 win against local rivals Wolves. And as we record now, on Thursday, April 4th, we just took an absolute hiding at the Etihad, 4-1, a Phil Foden hat-trick as Unai Emery rang the changes. We're going to talk about both games on the show today, and we're also going to give you a quick preview of the Brentford clash coming up on Saturday afternoon. I believe is a 3 p.m. kickoff at Villa Park, which might be the last one of those this season. And let's get straight into it, Andy. So let's go back a week. It is Aston Villa. We're lining up against Wolverhampton Wanderers. Both teams, although we don't get any credit for this, and we'll talk more about this in terms of the coverage of the Man City game. Both teams with some serious injury problems, some really depleted ranks. Lots of people were expecting to see Tim Urugbunum start for the suspended John McGinn, but we saw yet again a midfield double pivot of Douglas Luiz and Yuri Tillemans. Emi Martinez continued in goal, and obviously the back four almost picked itself with the injury to Matty Cash on international duty, which I believe you and Daniel spoke about on last week's show, if memory serves me correctly. And the forward line saw a bit of a surprise, I think, for just the third time this season. Correct me if I'm wrong. Leon Bailey and Moussa Diaby started in attack. Ollie Watkins was there as well, of course. What did you make? You were there last week at Villa Park. It might seem like a distant memory now. It looked like with Morgan Rodgers in the attack as well, there was to me it looked like we had four forwards on the pitch. No specialist holder midfielder. It seemed like Unai Emery was going full guns blazing for the Wolves, Andy.
Yeah, very attacking lineup, wasn't it? As soon as the team came out, it wasn't, say, just obviously Watkins, Diaby and Bailey, but Rodgers there on the left-hand side as well. And even the, you know, playing Piqué Moreno on the left, sort of more of an attacking player perhaps than Luca Dean. So yeah, really obviously just going for it really at home against a Wolves team which was missing essentially all of their attacking players and just trying to take advantage of that, wasn't it? It was exciting, you know, good to see. And you know, I don't know whether I mean, you wouldn't say Unai Emery necessarily plays with a handbrake on at all, but you know, he likes to make sure all the bases are covered. But this one felt like he was really trying to go for it at home, and you know, it's very, very positive team selection, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. It was all guns blazing, but it actually didn't start so beautifully for Aston Villa. I think it's fair to say that the Wolves had the best of the kind of early runnings. Morgan Rodgers and Moreno were struggling to deal with the switches of play to the right-hand side there, and the Wolves right wing-back, I want to say it was Semedo, could be wrong, was kind of having a having the freedom of the city basically to maraud up and down that flank, and it seems as though both Moreno and Rodgers, and we'll get onto Moreno specifically, because I think he had a difficult afternoon. It's been kind of muted. They were really struggling on that left-hand side to contain the Wolves' threat, and it seemed as though that was something that a weakness, if you will, that, that Wolves and Gary O'Neill had specifically targeted, Andy.
Yeah, I think absolutely. They created a, you know, a number of overloads down that side, didn't they? And got in behind Moreno on a number of occasions. I mean, I actually thought Rodgers was doing quite well defensively. It's probably the best game I've seen him have from that put that, that side of the game, you know, off the ball, sort of helping out his fullback. But I think such was the sort of planning and you know, the way they actually targeted that side, I think, you know, they didn't really have a chance. I felt like Moreno, towards the end of the half, you know, did kind of get a little bit tighter in that area, and we did look a little bit more comfortable in the second half of the first half, and it was a little bit better. But yeah, Moreno definitely had an afternoon to forget, one of his poorer performances in a Villa shirt, I thought. But
name checked by Unai Emery in the post match press conference as well. Unai Emery commended the fact that Moreno was getting into exactly the right areas to hurt Wolves that he was supposed to get in, and that the system was set up to get Moreno in space, and that happened and it worked. But Moreno just couldn't find the final pass. Moreno's obviously had an injury hit campaign. He had a major hamstring injury, missed the first half of the season, has missed preseason, obviously, has only really now started to get a run of games, coinciding with Luca Dean going down injured as well, kind of at the top of this year. But it is fair to say now, Moreno has had a run of games, has had some time to get up to speed, you would think. But does not seem to be quite the same player. Is it too simplistic, Andy, to just say this is the hamstring injury and has just weakened his confidence, or he hasn't gotten to a rhythm, or is it something a little bit more sinister, do you think, with Moreno? Because certainly he was one of our stars at the tail end of last season, and at the moment, lots of Villa fans, including this one, think that Luca Dean should be starting. What's your position on Moreno and also Luca Dean?
Yeah, I agree. Luca Dean should be starting. I think he absolutely earned his place as the number one left back at the club during that early part of the season when Moreno was injured. I think he does both sides of the game really well now. There were question marks when he first signed about his defensive side, but I think that's massively improved. And I think he links really well on that side with Torres and you know, whoever else is on that left hand side, whether it's Ramsey or Morgan Rodgers or whoever it is. And obviously his delivery is excellent, isn't it? He's a top class player. I think he's a little bit tarnished by the fact that he was signed by Gerrard, which has, you know, that's not his fault really. That's just what happened. But he's been excellent, I think, all season. And he'd certainly be my starting left back now. And in terms of Moreno, I just think you get hamstring injury and, you know, quite a serious one as well. He had surgery on his hamstring. It just feels like he's lost that little bit of nippiness that he had. I mean, he's very fast and good running on the ball. But I just think he's lost that little extra bit that made him so dangerous last season, and that's really unfortunate. Because he's the other aspects of his game, his delivery and his defensive aspects are just not as good as Luca Dean, unfortunately. But he had that turn of pace. He would run at defenders and he'd beat defenders, and he'd get in some great positions for the pullbacks, which we loved, didn't we, last season. It was a bit of a novelty to see someone just rolling the ball back rather than, you know, sort of booting the ball over the whole length of the penalty area. So yeah, it's just one of those things, whether it's to specifically the hamstring injury or whether it's, you know, just that he's a year older, or he's just had a bit of a dip in form. I don't know, but it seems like he's just lost a bit of sharpness.
Indeed, but his colleague, let's talk some more about Morgan Rogers. You said earlier, Andy, Morgan Rogers' best, obviously very early days in his Villa career. I have to say that when Morgan Rogers, and this is one of the things, like, you can't teach it. There's certain things in terms of Rogers' development which he will learn, and he's developing all the time, and I think he's already... You know, he's sitting under Unai Emery's learning tree, and we're going to see this guy develop. And Unai Emery said himself this week that Rodgers is playing more than he expected would happen because of our ravaged kind of squad and all of the injuries. And obviously, if Jacob Ramsey was fit on that side, you know, it's probably fair to say, with no disrespect to young Morgan, he would not be starting ahead of Jacob Ramsey at this moment in time. But what I will say is, in terms of the raw ingredients, if you're, you know, Chef Unai, this guy has everything you'd want. He is like 6 foot plus, quick, really technically able, skillful. And in terms of ball carrying and dribbling, which is one of those kind of lost arts, I know there's been lots of coverage and bemoaning of the Man City-Arsenal game, how no one was taking any risks, no one was dribbling, no one's breaking the lines, and how it was a bit of a ball fest. And obviously, with the modern defences being as structured and as tight as they are, you do need one or two dribblers in your team, like Leon Bailey, to draw people out of position and create space. But this guy's driving runs from deep. It is reminds me a little bit of a young Ross Barkley. Like, he's just fast, he's strong, he's dynamic, he's athletic, and he's got the skill and tenacity to go with it. This isn't someone who's... you know, like an Aaron Lennon used to be for Spurs, who just kind of kicks and chases it because he's really quick. Like, he's doing really skillful things with the football. You were there in person at Villa Park, Andy. Just a quick word on Rodgers. And yes, we know he has other things to develop, and he will develop those things. But in terms of those raw ingredients and those kind of bursts from deep, those attacking runs, I mean, what was it like watching him in the flesh, Andy?
Really exciting, I've got to say. He had, like, as we've talked about with Moreno, he had a difficult sort of first 15, 20 minutes. But after that, whenever he got the ball, he looked incredibly dangerous. He looked like he was, like you say, driving forward, beating players, skipping round players. I mean, you mentioned Barkley. I thought you were going to say Jack Grealish. It was that kind of... picking the ball up in his own half on that side and just driving through the middle of the pitch and essentially needing to be hauled down to stop him, really. There were a couple of occasions where he looked like he would just go all the way if they hadn't have fouled him. So he's such an exciting player. We'll talk about him, I guess, when we get onto the Man City game. But he's got everything, I think, that an attacking player needs, like you say, the height. He's got the poise. He reads the game so well. His touch is great. I mean, you know, when you think, they kept referring to it on the commentary last night, the fact that he was, you know, playing for Middlesbrough 4 months ago in the middle of the Championship, you know. But, and we all thought it was a bit of a strange one, didn't we, when we signed. We obviously trust Unai's judgment, but it was perhaps going to take couple of years maybe, and it was a bit of a punt really to bring him in. But I think we've really found one here, and I think he's going to be, and I don't want to
jinx
too
him
over the top, and he's, you know, he has got work to do, but on the ball, when he's got the ball at his feet, I think he's magic. He's really exciting to watch, the sort of player that fans in the ground love to see. You know, and he was doing those few bits that we like to see when Grealish was playing for us. But you know, it's very, very encouraging indeed.
Yeah, I've been surprised by it, and I think that it was a little bit of an impromptu signing, as the story goes, dear listener. Unai Emery was going through tape with his team of Middlesbrough, and literally kind of said, "Who is this guy? Let's sign him." Because he just saw something in him, and Unai said himself, something in the press conference after the Wolves game, that he is excited to see what Morgan Rodgers can be in 2 or 3 or 4 years' time, and that although he's playing more than he thought, it's really exciting and it's really encouraging. And obviously, early days, and we're not going to put any pressure on the lad, but for £8 million or whatever it was, this looks like it could be a bit of a steal. Speaking of a steal, we had after the kind of, I wouldn't call it an onslaught. It wasn't like Emi Martinez was forced into any kind of saves or anything. But after the first kind of 30 minutes, Villa eventually get a free kick in midfield. Douglas Luiz floats it beautifully to an overlapping Leon Bailey. The Bailey cross hits the flailing foot of a Wolves defender, and it just rolls beautifully into the path of a reinvigorated and reimagined Moussa Diaby, fresh from pulling on the blue shirt of France. And he absolutely smacked the leather off the ball and hit an unstoppable drive. Keeper couldn't get near it. I think Kilman was on the line. It just whizzed over his head before he could react. Incredible strike from Moussa Diaby, and obviously Diaby would pick out an assist later on, a very interesting assist, and we'll talk about Konsa's goal in a moment. But Moussa Diaby, is he back? We did say earlier on in the season that he was one of our star players in the first few months, and then obviously he had a bit of a blip in form, but is it safe to say the blip is over and Moussa Diaby is back, and back just in time, dare I say, for the running?
I think so. I think it looks that way, doesn't it? He's certainly he looks reinvigorated. He looks like his confidence is back. He's had a couple of important assists, as we say, and he's scored a couple of goals as well. He scored against against Ajax, of course, and you know, it scored this goal as well, and it'll do him the world of good. I think the start of it was perhaps that assist for Luca Dean at Luton. I just want to quickly say, you mentioned Martinez there. He did make an absolute world-class save from Ike Nouri.
Oh, he did. He did,
from point blank range as well.
You're right. Yeah, he did have a save so to make. Used to it. It was a very big save. Yeah, thank you for correcting me there.
We're just so used to that now. It just goes. It goes. Yeah. Unnoticed.
It does. You're right. It, don't we? But, good. That's a good shout.
Yeah, I mean, it was getting back to the goal. You know, really nice. You know, finish from Diaby, and that's one of the things I questioned about him. I always thought when he strikes the ball, he never looks really comfortable. His shots always seemed a little bit weak, a little bit directionless, really. And it's, you know, it perhaps just was a confidence thing, but he really leathered this one and it went through the keeper. I mean, I'd have been a bit disappointed, I think, if I was a Wolves fan that Saar didn't get a bit closer to it and well, save it essentially. But it was probably past him before he knew what was happening. So it was, yeah, great to see. Fantastic for Diaby. And that's what you want, isn't it? At this stage of the season, players that maybe haven't been right at the fore in the last few months coming in to form at the right time and maybe helping, you know, the weary legs from the ones that have been holding everything together just to kind of get over the line, really. And if Diaby can hit some form over these last few games, then it'll be very welcome indeed.
Very welcome indeed. And you have to say, because Diaby has had a bit of an indifferent period now, he should be fresh. He certainly looks fresh and looks good. But unfortunately, as we got to half-time, Andy, one of our players who is not fresh plays every minute, more or less, for a Villa that is available. One of our most durable players and our leading goal scorer, talisman up front, number 11, Ollie Watkins, obviously also played a game and a bit for England as well during the international break, so didn't really have a rest there. At half time, I guess you come back from your pint and your pie or whatever you had, Andy, and you see John Duran kind of dancing on the touchline, ready to come on, and Ollie Watkins nowhere to be seen. Certainly on Villa Twitter, the alarm bells were ringing. And perhaps it was similar in the ground. But the good news, obviously, on Ollie Watkins, he may be available for Brentford on Saturday. He was taken off as a precaution because he felt something in his hamstring, but that injury doesn't seem to be too serious. But John Duran came in for a 45-minute appearance. And firstly, Andy, we all have worried about this moment all season. What happens if Ollie Watkins gets injured? Well, he got injured. And what we saw happen in the second half, and also in elements of the Man City game, wasn't as disastrous as some people feared, Andy, with John Duran, Box Office John, stepping into the breach.
Yeah, no, it was exciting. It was fun to watch, wasn't it? Him and Zaniolo to some degree were a real breath of fresh air on, you know, in that forward line, and certainly Zaniolo played his part in the goal. But yeah, I mean, he just creates something, doesn't he, Duran? He's got such a kind of unorthodox way about him. I think he unsettles defenders. They're not quite sure how much time they've got. He can put the he can start the press, and he puts the afterburners on, and he's right up, you know, the defender's backside before you know what's happening. And
loves the slide tackle as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't see that, do you? You never see a striker actually win the ball when they trigger that press. But he did. He's just got that in him, hasn't he? He's just a bit different, and I think defenders are not really sure about him. And I wasn't too concerned about the second half in terms of Watkins going off. It's more the games to come, really, where you might be missing him that you worry about. But I had no real concerns about the second half. I kind of expected Duran to score, if I'm honest, and he was excellent, and, you know, obviously didn't give the Wolves defence a moment's rest, really. So it's fun as well. He's fun to watch, isn't he? He's just got so much about him. And, you know, we talk about, don't we, maybe sort of Unai Emery sort of chiseling him into shape over the coming months and years, but I think you don't want to lose too much of that edge, do you?
It sounds like more of a pneumatic drill is needed with John Duran to chisel him into shape. But yeah,
we need to catch him first.
There are elements to his game which are really, really exciting, and elements which are equally frustrating. I guess it goes back to the earlier conversation about Rodgers. When you buy these youngsters who are new to the league, new to the country in the case of John Duran, new to the language, you have to really just accept that there's going to be some nonsense with them and some things that you don't like, and it is about chiseling away or drilling away or sledgehammering away to build them into what you want them to be. But it was one of those magical John Duran slide tackles. It was Luca Dean who was introduced for the second goal. Luca Dean and Zaniolo linking up nicely on the right-hand side. The ball comes loose. Duran comes flying in out of nowhere with a slide tackle on the Wolves defender. Zaniolo picks it up, drives the ball fiercely towards the box, picks out Moussa Diaby, the aforementioned Moussa Diaby, who rolls it into the path of Ezri Konsa, who very deliberately, ladies and gentlemen, very deliberately chipped that goalkeeper and put the ball in. I mean, I think it was probably a cross aim for Duran, and it was going to be a beautiful tap-in for Duran had it have met its mark. But a quick word on the on Zaniolo and his kind of, speaking of people who are reinvigorated, I don't know if he's playing for his next move or he realizes he's in the last chance saloon in terms of being a Premier League player, but whatever it is, Zaniolo looks like a different beast than he's looked the rest of the season at the moment. And also a word for Ezri Konsa, topping off a wonderful week where he made his England debut and scores a goal against local rivals Wolves, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, thought Zaniolo really made a difference, added some real sort of vim to the forward line. I thought that piece of play on that side with Luca Dean to get away initially for the goal was it was just a lovely bit of skill, wasn't it? And close control, and yeah, he looks a lot sharper than he has in previous kind of outings off the bench that he's had recently. Obviously, he scored the goal at West Ham, didn't he? So maybe that's given him a little bit of a boost as well. And yeah, I mean, it doesn't much matter, does it, what he's playing for, as long as he's putting in those performances. I thought we probably saw the two sides of him against City last night, but for the appearance against Wolves, he was excellent, and he really kind of created that goal, didn't he, for Konsa. Although Diaby will get the assist, which I'm sure he's very happy with. But as for the goal, it was just nice for him, wasn't it, to round off the week. You kind of expect Konsa to be arriving at the back post with a header from a corner. But yeah, nice little dink over the goalkeeper from a really tight angle, which just happened to go over the line before Duran could poke it in. So no, it's great. Nice reward for him. Because the thing with Konsa is as well, he's kind of, I'm not entirely sure if this right back position is what he would choose for himself, really. But he's doing a job for the team, isn't he? And I think he's very accomplished there. He's obviously had a couple of games now in that position for England as well. And it's great to see, and it's a nice reward for that diligence, really, that he's shown and what he's brought to the team, playing in that position.
Yeah, and you have to say he did himself no harm at all with his performances for England. I think we were touting him years ago as a potential England defender. He had a little bit of a wobble, but he's one that's been rejuvenated under Unai Emery as well, and he's really a key part of our journey in the Premier League. Obviously signed from Brentford for a measly £12 million. I imagine he's quadrupled that kind of value now. And he's grown with us, just as we're wanting the likes of Morgan Rogers and Duran to grow with us and turn into elite level players. That's what Konsa's done. He came in behind Bjorn Engels, dare I say, initially, as backup centre back. Bjorn Engels and Mings were the first choice initially, and then we had kind of Courtney Hawes and Ezri Konsa waiting in the wings for opportunities. And I think Konsa made his debut in the League Cup. I mean, that's kind of where he started for Aston Villa. And now, a few years later, for him to be an England international, probably looking quite good, considering Lewis Dunk embarrassed himself so badly. Trippier's injured. Reece James is completely injured. Apparently, might not be back anytime soon as well. Looking probably good for an England place at the Euros. So, all good for Ezri Konsa and all good for Aston Villa. A really good win, 2-0 against local rivals. And the message would have been, bring on Manchester City, which we will move on to now. And there was a little bit of a shock on social media. Certainly I was surprised when I saw the starting lineup initially announced as Emi Martinez, Konsa, Carlos, Longley, with Luca Dean at left back, Douglas Luiz, Timur Rugbunum, Moussa Diaby, Morgan Rogers, Nicolò Zaniolo making a start, and of course John Duran in for the injured Ollie Watkins. So we, from what was already then a depleted squad, then we get the news, I think about 10 minutes before kickoff, that Emi Martinez, the world's number one, can't play either, and the lesser spotted Robin Olsen was taking his place in goal. Many of us, Andy, without naming any names, feared the worst when we saw this lineup. What did you share with the listeners who weren't in our group chat last night? What did you make of this starting 11 for Aston Villa?
Well, I think my comment was, if we keep it below 10, we'll have done well. but I mean, it was the Conference League team, wasn't it? It was clearly there were some, obviously, some enforced absentees, weren't they? I'm sure Ollie Watkins would have played had he been fit. But I think it was interesting kind of keeping Pau Torres out. And the other changes, Tim Iwobunam coming in. You know, it felt a little bit like we've got 7 games to go. I think it's 7 games to go. 7 or 8 games to go.
Yeah, I think 7 games in the league, and obviously at least two in the cup.
Yeah, so it felt like we've got a busy time coming up. We need to be sensible about this one. And even if we play our best team, the likelihood is we're going to get beaten. So let's not be silly, and let's manage the situation in a sensible way. It feels a little bit like throwing the game, but you know, it's at the same time, I don't think that was the case in reality. I thought, it didn't look that way, certainly for a large part of the first half. So I think, yeah, it was a bit of a surprise, and you kind of think, my goodness, this could be a bloodbath. But and particularly when the news came through about Martinez. But it's probably, if they can, you know, if they use it to their advantage, it's probably helped a few fringe players get minutes in their legs, and it's helped one or two rest as well, which is not a bad thing, and they're probably no worse off than they would have been anyway.
Yeah, well, it was certainly an interesting starting 11. I think that it is like it's one of those things. We are at the point in time where we are really depending and leaning and needing people to step up and step in. As we've already mentioned on the show, Morgan Rogers was just not expected to play this much football so early. He wasn't expecting, I don't think Unai Emery was expecting him to be starting games. We have to manage Leon Bailey's minutes, we know. We probably have to also manage Pau Torres' minutes, apparently. Diego Carlos is another one who has struggled to play 3 games in a week, so I can expect we might see him drop out of the starting 11 on Saturday, or if not, certainly you wouldn't think he'd play against Lille. Watkins is now injured. Martinez has a stomach bug. So there's all these little things, and they really are adding up. I think I saw online a couple of people tweeted it. I think Martin Lawrence, is it, from Who Scored, kind of tweeted a Villa 11, because obviously the national media doesn't care that we have players missing, and you know, it's not a thing. Only Wolves have injuries, or Spurs have injuries, or Newcastle. It's not mentioned at Aston Villa, which I think is largely a byproduct of Unai Emery just not making those excuses. Whereas some people, Gary O'Neill, for example, might start a press conference and talk about XG and missing players, how if we had these players, we would have won. That's just not in Unai Emery, and no shade on Gary O'Neill. He is entitled to conduct his press conferences as he sees fit, but that's just not a look or a thing that Unai Emery does or is going to do. So I think because it's not highlighted by the manager, because he's not pushing that narrative, people who aren't watching Villa week in and week out, or who aren't paying close attention to us, don't know quite how severe this injury crisis is. But yeah, I think the starting 11 that we didn't have available yesterday included Emi Martinez, Matty Cash, Tyrone Mings, Pau Torres. Obviously, Alex Moreno was rested also. Boubacar Kamara, John McGinn, Jacob Ramsey, Ollie Watkins, so on and so forth. Like not to mention Emi Buendia as well. Like a ridiculous list of international players and starters for Aston Villa were not starting yesterday away at the Etihad, at the home of the world champions and the European champions and the Premier League champions, by the way. And no one talks about it. No one mentions it. And part of that is down to Unai Emery. But I think it's important for us, at least in the little Villa bubble that we're in, to call these things out. Like, this man, Unai Emery, is working a absolute minor miracle with all of the injuries he's had. 3 ACLs in one season? It's unheard of. Never mind the rest of the stuff. So just wanted to kind of, again, it doesn't make the way to the national media. And I think part of that is because Unai Emery doesn't use it as an excuse. So kudos for that. but I just think it needs to be spoken into existence a little bit on at least a Villa channel here, so that we can all appreciate just the beautiful work Unai Emery's doing. Speaking of beautiful work, Rodri, perhaps the best midfield player in the league, did some beautiful work, popping up after just a few minutes into the game to score an opening goal. Zaniolo, perhaps not giving Luca Dean enough support there, one-on-one with the very dynamic Jeremy Doku. Doku rolls the ball across the box, 11 minutes gone. Rodri absolutely smashes one into the top corner. Robin Olsen, no chance. And I guess, Andy, it would be fair to say that some people may have been fearing the worst at that moment.
Yeah, I think so. I think that was the point where I thought we're probably not going to get anything from this game. And, you know, it's so hard to come back and do anything at Man City when they go ahead, and particularly so early. It really does put the ball in their court, doesn't it? It was, you know, good goal. I'm loath to criticise players too much, particularly someone like Zaniolo, who hasn't played an awful lot of football. I thought actually again he looked you know, pretty good going forward. I thought he linked quite well, provided a little bit of an outlet for us, you know, and was kind of involved in the goal by being a bit of a decoy. But yeah, I mean, it felt like one of those Man City games, didn't it? And it sort of turned out that way, really. But it felt like one of those games where they just kind of score early and run away with the game, really. Even without, you know, Haaland, De Bruyne, et cetera, who were on the bench. So, yeah, good goal. But, you know, I don't want to dwell too much on how good Man City are, really.
Well, let's not. Let's dwell on how good the Aston Villa equaliser was, because it's probably the last good thing that we can talk about in this game. Well, maybe there's a couple of other good things. I am always glass half full. A magical counter-attack. I think Douglas Luiz wins the ball. Diego Carlos gets on it. Zaniolo drives, gets a touch on the ball. Morgan Rogers does one of his driving runs that we talked about earlier in the show. Eventually plays a beautiful 1-2 with John Duran, who's also involved in the build-up. And then John Duran, the beautiful weight of pass, by the way, from Morgan Rogers. He's more than just showing that he's more than just a kind of powerful ball runner. Really nice weight of pass in between two Man City, three Man City defenders, actually. He just threaded the needle there, and John Duran with a finish that would that Ollie Watkins or Erling Haaland himself, who was watching from the Man City bench, would be proud of. Absolutely strokes it into the bottom corner. Goalkeeper from an acute angle. Goalkeeper has no chance. And these are three Aston Villa reserves, with all due respect, combining to score what was an incredible counter-attack goal. So what did you make of the goal, and what did you make of the I guess resilience that Villa showed to bounce back from that early Man City goal? As you say, lots of times Man City get an early goal and they just run away with it, but Villa's heads didn't drop. We stayed in it and we scored a beautiful goal to level things up for 1-1.
Absolute terrific goals. Completely unexpected, like you say. And yeah, just you saw the best of both of those young players. Rodgers with his creativity and poise, and just great on the ball. And Duran, you know, just doing the right thing, playing the 1-2, making the run. Absolutely brilliant finish. I have to say, I think I've watched it a few times today, and I think it's probably one of my goals of the season that Villa have scored. I just thought it was so good how it was created and finished off. That's not an easy finish, is it? And just really enjoyable to watch. Really great football. you know, just showed the quality of those players. You know, it's I'm not sure, you know, what we can say about it really. I think it totally shocked Man City. I thought, you know, that obviously their fans wouldn't have been expecting that. I think they were appealing for offside, and you know, it was just absolutely brilliant, and it showed the real quality that those two young players have.
Yeah, and it's really encouraging as well that they had that composure as well to do it, and to build it and to do it. You know, it is the toughest place to be. I mean, it is Man City. They are again world and European champions, and to rip them limb from limb like that and score such a clinical and beautiful goal is a real positive from this. And just think of, and the other positive I'll give overall for the game, because the rest of it is it all goes downhill from here, is that when we had Ross Barkley on loan and he started like a house on fire and he was great, and then he started to fall off a cliff, extracurricular activities were reported that he wasn't necessarily looking after himself and got injured, and he came back really unfit and bloated, a far cry from the trim Ross Barkley who's starring for Luton this season. Anyway, and I would get really angry on the show and be like, we are not going to sign Ross Barkley. He's not interested. He's not disciplined. He's not being professional. He's kicking water cans and advertisement hoardings when he came off. I said, we need to be using these minutes for Jacob Ramsey because they're going to be like gold dust for him. And that turned out to be true. And eventually Ross Barkley did drop to the bench. Dean Smith played Jacob Ramsey, even though Jacob Ramsey in retrospect wasn't playing very well. He was getting those minutes under his belt, and Jacob Ramsey came back the following year bigger, stronger, and much better for it. So even though we're about to talk about not so good things, the one takeaway that I have from this game, and Unai Emery alluded to it, we're getting gold dust minutes into John Duran, into the likes of Morgan Rogers, Timmy Rigbunham, who I don't think disgraced himself at all in there with one of the best midfielders in the world, in Rodri and Phil Foden. And Omari Kellerman, also a shout out to him making his Premier League debut. Kane Kessler-Hayden having made his Premier League debut against Wolves as well. So although the result isn't what we wanted or what we needed or what we wanted to see, the minutes, and even Zaniolo, if he's sticking around, he doesn't look like he is, but even if he is, just these experiences that we're putting into these players are going to be like gold dust moving forward. You can't replicate it. You can't replicate it on loan in the Championship. You can't replicate it on loan in Spain or anywhere else. And you certainly can't replicate it in reserve team or Premier League 2 football. This is the real deal. This is the business end of the season. This is Man City, world champions, going for another title. Still in the hunt for that. Still in the hunt for a Champions League. This is as good as it gets in terms of experience and the likes of Duran, the likes of Morgan Rogers, Zaniolo, Timur Ogbunam, so on and so forth, are really going to benefit from that. But one thing we didn't benefit from in terms of our young players was dear old Zaniolo taking a little bit of a... I mean, I can't really defend it, so I'm not going to try. And it seems like Zaniolo doesn't defend it. But even at the Sunday League level where I play, it's kind of known that if you're in the wall, you're in the wall. I mean, that's just kind of the deal. You can cover up your face and you cover up your balls and you try and protect yourself as best you can. But what you do not do at any level, be it under 10s, be it Sunday League where I play, or certainly in the Premier League, what you do not do under any circumstances is jump out the way and break the wall. And that mistake from Zaniolo, it's fair to say, cost us a goal. I mean, I think that Emi Martinez probably saves that, but we didn't have Emi Martinez, so it doesn't matter. So the point is, I think Zaniolo, I don't want to be too hard on him, but I think bare bones here, Andy, he cost us a goal there, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think he has, but he's, again, it's not great, is it? But do we kind of expect these things sometimes from young attacking players? It's it is one of those things, but there's no doubt about it. That ball shouldn't be going in the net, should it? It's right at the wall. It should be deflected away. And the fact it's gone in, obviously it makes Olsen look a bit bad too. But he had no chance with it. It was a good free kick, but it shouldn't have got anywhere near the goal. It was, and it really upset us before half time, didn't it? It was really, really, really bad, you know, from that perspective. So, we were going in 1-1, and then all of a sudden it's 2-1, and you know, not so great, really.
Yeah, I think the less said about that, the better. So let's move on to the second half. And Villa again showed our counter-attacking strengths. An amazing break. Zaniolo involved. The speed of old Moussa Diaby involved. Eventually, the ball breaks to Zaniolo. And then Douglas Luiz finds himself with a beautiful opportunity to take a shot at goal. And should he have done better at this point? Maybe he should have... maybe we needed Douglas Luiz there to slot one in the bottom corner. I don't know. He certainly works the goalkeeper, which is all you can ask for. He works the goalkeeper. The goalkeeper has an amazing save. And then just a few moments later, after this wonderful chance for Aston Villa to draw the game level, it goes badly wrong and the game is essentially over at that point. Phil Foden and Rodri combine. Rodri, kind of Moussa Diaby. I mean, we know Moussa Diaby's defensive contributions are not fantastic, but Moussa Diaby is kind of glided past by Rodri very, very easily there. And Rodri lays the ball into Foden, who's completely unmarked. I don't know where the Villa midfield was. I don't know where the Villa backline was. But basically, the ball rolls directly into Foden, and it's a beautiful finish, don't get me wrong. But he's under no pressure, he's under no duress, no one is near him, no one's challenging him. I don't know where the defensive midfield was, I don't know where the centre-backs were, but they certainly weren't marking Phil Foden, and he says thank you very much, rolls one into the bottom corner, 3-1, and it's then definitely game over, Andy.
Clinched it, really, didn't it? That's it was one of those moments where you felt that either this is going to be kind of a new type of Villa where they go and get that equaliser against all the odds, they hang in there and then somehow they snatch an equaliser and draw the game, or were they going to just capitulate a little bit? And as we've seen from countless Villa teams over the years in these situations, and unfortunately it was the latter. It could have been different if Luiz puts his chance away. Longley, obviously, very close to equalising, in fairness, really good corner and header, but it was just that moment of they just felt like Villa switched off and it was all too easy, the ball ends up in the net, good finish and everything, and Foden had a really good game, but little bit disappointing, but not unexpected either on some levels.
Yeah, it was one of those. I think it was a little bit sloppy. You can't give Phil Foden that kind of space, and then it goes really from bad to worse. Callum Chambers really showing why he isn't trusted anymore by Unai Emery, making, and you don't want to be too harsh on Chambers, but he hasn't had a lot of football, but he has probably two or three touches of the ball in a team that presses as well as anyone. He has an opportunity to pass it. He has an opportunity to honk it into row Z. He dillies and he dallies and he's dispossessed right outside from goal, and Foden spanks well into the top corner. Another one, I feel the same way about this goal as you felt about the Moussa Diaby goal. Yes, it was hit with some venom, but I would like to see the goalkeeper dive and move towards it. And as you said, the Wolves fans were disappointed. I'm not saying he should have saved it, but I feel like it wasn't in the top corner. And although it's very, very fast, I just don't like it when Mark Bosnich used to do it sometimes. He would just be flat-footed and not respond, whereas it always feels like Emi Martinez will dive and make an attempt. Whenever I see a goalkeeper not dive, I wonder what might have been, and that's probably me being ultra harsh to Robin Olsen. He probably doesn't save that anyway, but either way, it's in, it's 4-1, and then, you know, with kind of 20-25 minutes to go, you really are concerned that the wheels might completely fall off, but it didn't. Villa held in. We made some additional changes. Douglas Luiz had already been rested. We were about to bring on, I think, Kane Kessler-Hayden to rest Ezri Konsa too. But then Zaniolo goes down injured, and that was a welcome bonus for Amari Kellerman, who got to make his Premier League debut away at the Etihad, as a young Jack Grealish did once upon a time at a similar age. I think we were also getting honked 3-1 or 4-1 at the time. So perhaps some serendipitous happenings going on there with Amari Kellerman. Certainly high hopes for him moving forward. We get out of there. It's 4-1. We lose. And Emery is very matter-of-fact in the press conference. He doesn't say that he threw the game in so many words, but he kind of says, hey, we have four games this week. And, I mean, reading between the lines, Andy, he was saying, for my money anyway, we're Aston Villa, we have four games this week, and this is the one we are least likely to win, and we're going to focus on Lille, and we're going to focus on Brentford. Was that your reading of comments?
Yeah, and I mean that was the reading of the team selection. I think it was when you look at it after the initial kind of disappointment of, you know, oh, we don't want to win this game, then it's more actually, let's be sensible about it. We have got a lot of football coming up and a lot of intense games coming up. And this is the time of the season where we really have to be kind of at our best if we want to achieve what we're hoping we all achieve. You know, we want desperately to make sure we've got that Champions League qualification to kind of give something tangible for the wonderful season we've had and the wonderful couple of seasons we've had now under Emery. And we want that to be the ultimate goal or the ultimate destination as a result of that. You know, it's you know, that all the, I mean, constantly breaking records, aren't we? But you know, the latest one is the number of wins in a 38 game season, which we've drawn level now with the team last season and the Brian Little's 95-96 season when we finished fourth. You know, and so the likelihood is that we will break that record and, you know, and get to 19-20 and hopefully one or two more as well. And it's just incredible, really, when you stand back and look at it. And we can get frustrated in the moment, I think, with certain things and little things that are going awry, and obviously disappointed with injuries and so on. But the big picture is just absolutely incredible. And it's never been this good. I can't remember it ever being this good in my lifetime. We've had seasons where we finished second that I can remember, and obviously we've won cups and qualified for Europe and all these sort of things. But that was at a time where there wasn't a cartel of six clubs which dominated the league. You know, it was easier to have a run at a league title or a European place. You know, it's virtually impossible to get in there, isn't it?
Virtually impossible, but we might be making the impossible possible. Chelsea are way back. Man United are way back. Spurs are still just about back. We are still in fourth place. And just that there, I think we've got a new chant there. You said it was so good, so good, so good. It could be sweet Unai. Good times never felt so good. So good! But yeah, it is fantastic. It is brilliant. It's a great time to be an Aston Villa fan. And you talk about those records. We have an opportunity on Saturday, just as we finish up here. Let's talk very briefly about Brentford. The Bees come to town fresh after a 1-1 draw with the aforementioned Manchester United. Ollie Watkins, we don't know if he's going to make it, but if he does make it, it will certainly be billed by the England press as Tony versus Watkins. Do we break the record on Saturday? We're gonna obviously, hopefully, have a fresh squad. The biggest news that we certainly will have is we'll have a returning Meatball, who will have the bit between his teeth and be eager to make amends after that ridiculous sending off against Spurs and the three games that he's been missing. So he should be fresh and ready to go. Ollie Watkins may be back. We don't know. Jacob Ramsey may be back. We don't know. We will learn more, I guess, tomorrow on Friday at Unai Emery's press conference. But either way, Brentford at home is a winnable game, and these are points that we need, Andy. How confident are you running into this game, and what are you looking out for on Saturday against the Bees?
Can you ever be confident against Brentford? That's the thing. I mean, we have beaten them a couple of times now, haven't we? But for a long time, it felt like we would never, ever beat them.
Scott Hogan,
so,
thanks.
So, I mean... but it's... yeah, I mean, it feels like... It's like you say, it's going to be Builders, Watkins against Tony. But I think... I mean, really, we should have too much for them at home, for sure. I worry a little bit about our defence. I think we are conceding more sort of big chances. Feels like lately we're letting teams in a little bit easier than we were. I really hope, obviously, that Pau Torres is back. Although, you know, I've got no real issue with Longley playing. I think he's been really good. And it will be great to, like you say, great to have McGinn back. I think it feels like, you know, just a bit of a he'll be chomping at the bit, won't he? And he'll be driving that team. Hopefully, you know, not lunging into too many challenges, but really kind of sort of focusing on you know, making sure we're doing the right things going forward, because you know, he's. You know, he's been such an important player for us this season. The big ones are obviously Watkins and Martinez, and if they're back, I'll be feeling you know, very, very confident, I think.
I mean, we could have a situation where Emi Martinez, Jacob Ramsey, John McGinn, and Ollie Watkins, as well as Leon Bailey, who was rested, and Pau Torres, all come back into that starting 11. And you think, if you're able to field those kind of players, it may come too soon for Jacob Ramsey again, and until we hear Unai's press conference, we don't know. I think if we're fielding those kind of players, I believe even if Tony gets a goal or a penalty or whatever he does, I think we'll still have too much for Brentford. So let's get your score prediction, Andy. We're closing in on an hour mark, so time to wrap it up. What do you think is going to be the score? Aston Villa versus Brentford?
I'm going to go big. I'm going to go 4-1.
Woo! 4-1 to Aston Villa. I'm going to go 2-0 Aston Villa. I think it'll be same as the Wolves game. I think we'll control the game, and I think it'll be a goal in each half, and I think it will be... I don't foresee this being a stressful one. I think it's going to be... I just think, again, with those players back, I think we'll just have too much for Brentford. A good side, but they've not been quite the same this season, and yeah, I think 2-0 Aston Villa. All right, that is all we have time for. We will hopefully talk to you again next week on the typical show, reviewing the Brentford result, and also previewing the Europa League quarterfinal tie against Lille at Villa Park next Thursday. We will hopefully be back on this show next week, live on YouTube, to review that game. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Get well soon, Ollie Watkins. Get well soon, Emi Martinez. Welcome back, John McGinn. And of course, up the Villa. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to Gather Round Again, an Aston Villa podcast. Please like down below and... subscribe. Up the Villa.
Dalian Atkinson on one of those great runs.